Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey everybody, what is up? I am Chad Wesley Smith and this is another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Either on YouTube, as we're now going video every week, or just on the audio version on iTunes. You know, if you can't handle the baby blues for an hour straight, it's understandable. You wouldn't want to be like veering off into traffic. I'm joined, as always, marvelous Max Montana. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks, Chad.
So today we're going to be talking about the U.S. Open. Coming up this weekend, one of the biggest powerlifting meets ever. But before we do that, real quick, thank you to our sponsors. Virus International for all your tight man pants needs. Use Jug for 10% off. Grind Sports Nutrition, formulated by Dr. Mike Isratel of Renaissance Periodization to fit right in with your RP diet. Use Jug 10 for 10% off at grindsupplements.com. Trifecta Nutrition, official meal prep provider of Team Juggernaut, official meal prep provider of USA Weightlifting, CrossFit Games, NFL players, all kinds of stuff. Trifecta is getting big. TrifectaNutrition.com/juggernaut, and you're getting great tasting food delivered right to your door. And French presses and French presses for those who love fine coffee and big triceps. It's a lifestyle. So, the U.S. Open, USPA U.S. Open, this weekend at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. What do you think makes this such a big deal? Why is this so significant to powerlifting?
The money, for sure. I mean, there's... What's the actual figure? Is it 250, 200?
Yeah, I had a bit of a hard time in doing the extensive research that we do at the beginning, that, you know, before each one of these episodes, of pinning down an exact number. I had seen up to 240,000. I more commonly see 200,000 plus.
It's $200,001. I think it's definitely, I mean, 200, even if it's 100, it's got to be more significant than any meet that I can think of in the last 20 years. Maybe there was some money meets in the WPO, but I doubt that money was even fulfilled.
Yeah, I know that was a big complaint. You know, if you're not familiar with the WPO, World Powerlifting Organization, this would have been kind of early, mid-2000s at the Arnold, multiply lifting in what... You know, when multiply lifting was the lifting, was the only thing, really. It would have been the IPF single ply stuff and multiply. Mm-hmm. And this was on, you know, as much of a rock and roll kind of setup as you could have at the Arnold. You know, I don't know if there were pyrotechnics and shit going off.
Yeah, but, I don't know if there was anything like that. But
that was sort of the idea behind it. Just this huge, you know, extreme type of powerlifting meet at the Arnold. I know there's definitely been a lot of complaints about money not getting paid off.
Yeah, they may have had like a TV contract or two at some point with it. I mean, there was
like
some
Fox Sports 7.
Yes, something. It aired right after badminton on the Ocho. Yeah, but there was definitely money advertised or money there, but there's no way that it was 100,000.
No,
and there was absolutely no way it was 200,000. And I guess we still have yet to see exactly what the numbers and money and how that all pans out.
Yeah, and I did the big dogs this past year in Australia, which was 30,000.
Right.
And, yeah, so we're talking 200,000 plus prize money. I believe 35,000 to the winner of each category by Wilks, so the lightweight men, heavyweight men, and women. And then 10,000 for second and 5,000 for third. Plus different payouts as well for each separate weight class, so it's going to be it's big money. I hope that and it definitely crossed my mind of a WPO type of situation.
Yeah.
Like it's just so much beyond anything that I've seen before, and being involved in powerlifting and a lot of ancillary businesses around it, I'm just trying to think like where is the money coming from, and why is it coming? Because what's the return on investment for them?
A good analogy, Price is Right. You place bids initially early in the show on, you know, an entertainment set or like lawn furniture or some kind of bullshit like that. As the show progresses and the contestant gets further and further, till they get to the showcase showdown where there's like a Winnebago or like, you know, it's like $60,000. Right. There's this huge prize as they get up. It's a car. If you start out with the Winnebago, where do you go from there? You're not going to win a house. And I think that's the same thing here. It's like if 200,000 is the total combined prize and the last big meet was 30,000.
Yeah, that's
it's a big stretch. And it, does that mean there's a big spike and here it is and it just drops off from there and then again we climb back up? Or does it mean that it's hard to believe there's going to be like, you know, 400,000, 500, 600, a million, yeah, you know, dollar because prizes.
Because, you know, what companies would have an interest in helping fund that?
Yeah.
So, you know, this Kern Capital, the company that's involved, I don't know a ton about them. I mean, maybe they set up USPA, US Open as a
non-profit. You know,
as a nonprofit. Like every golf.
Monstrous charity. Yeah. You
know, I mean, every golf, PGA golf tournament. All nonprofits. I mean, part of the NFL is set up as a nonprofit.
Are they really?
Yeah. So maybe maybe they're doing something like that, and it's just a huge tax write off for Kern Capital. That would make sense to me.
Yeah.
But that kind of stuff aside, I guess I would have, if I was running it, I probably would have been like, all right, 100,000, half of what they're putting in, still way bigger than anything else.
Yeah.
But would have maybe given some more time to grow or room to grow from there. 100 this year, 150 the year after, 200. Yeah. It's like, wow, this is really picking up momentum. But, you know, I'd be down there coaching. We've got a booth. You know, didn't contribute that much towards the 200,000 part of things. But it's very exciting. And I wish nothing but the absolute best, greatest weekend possible for the lifting, for the as an event, and something that, you know, can showcase powerlifting in a great light that makes companies, you know, like Rogue and Slingshot and big supplement companies and stuff, and maybe even companies, you know, who have nothing to do with strength sports, but who sponsor other sports that they also have nothing to do with, like, you know, American Express and Visa and that kind of stuff, you know, the Built Ford Tough, USAW Championships or something like that.
Yeah. You know,
That they see that people want to watch, and Visa or American Express gives prize money to track and field, and it can happen, and it is going to take someone to take a huge risk, like Kern Capital guy is taking on this, or maybe he's just that rich and it's not a risk. Yeah,
I guess that's kind of the big question with the money is like, is this just a one-off unique situation because you got some guy who has tons of money to get rid of or to do this or whatever. Is it a passion project for one person or is it a viable, like, kickstart to the new generation of money meets in powerlifting?
Yeah.
It's tough to say. I mean, I guess we see what happens, right? I mean, hopefully I'm sure it's a positive thing no matter what, but hopefully it turns into something long term, you know?
Yeah. And I've competed in what I feel were the best run, best showcase powerlifting meets in the world, Big Dogs, Pro Raw, both 7 and 8, all in Australia, organized by Marcos Markopoulos, Imad Nayef, just phenomenally done meets on every level from, you know, prize money with Pro Raw, I think having 24,000 prize money, Big Dogs, 30,000, and seeing what a really, really first-class operation looks like. I'm assuming I'll be the only person there probably who's been at those meets. And now we'll have been at this to compare firsthand.
Right.
So I'm interested to see how they compare. Again, I hope that it is. It's making these companies take notice and say, hey, it's worthwhile to invest, you know, more money into powerlifting, into weightlifting. You know, strongman, there's already quite a bit of money in, but it would be phenomenal. And it could be such a significant step forward for strength sports if it's all done really well. And I guess we'll see in a few days if it is.
Has the World's Strongest Man had big prize money?
The winner, I think, is getting like $60,000. The winner of the Arnold Strongman, I think, is $75,000.
Oh, that's pretty. That's really good.
Yeah.
That's huge. Well, I mean, whereas like bodybuilding is giant.
I mean, the Olympia, winning, I think, is $250,000 or $275,000.
I thought it was closer to like $400,000. But I could be totally wrong with that. I mean,
I want to say it was 200 something.
Still, that's enormous, six figures, you know. Yeah.
Those ones are at the point where if you're winning that, you know, I mean, you win 275,000 at the Olympia, you could live off of that and nothing else. But obviously, there's a lot of sponsorships and stuff.
Yeah.
The strongman, you know, prize money plus ancillary sponsorships around that, appearance fees, that kind of thing. You're living a very comfortable life with that. You know, if we get into having two or three powerlifting meets, you know, where if you win or you're top three at each of them, and that's getting you up into, you know, close to six figures, and then more, you know, legitimate sponsorships on top of that, you could, and I know that this is Marcos Markopoulos, the meet director of all the big meets out there in Australia, has said this to me many times, that he wants to, you know, be at the forefront of pushing towards someone who, like, the first truly legitimate professional powerlifter, because people will talk about being a pro powerlifter, you know, or a pro total. There's a hell of a lot of people with a pro total, and not a single one of them is a pro powerlifter, meaning they make their money from competing in powerlifting. So if this can push towards that, phenomenal. You know, there's things in other sports. The ADCC, the Abu Dhabi Combat Championships, or the Abu Dhabi Pro for jiu-jitsu and grappling stuff, where there's, you know, well over $100,000 prize money. And there's another CrossFit competition over there. I mean, the CrossFit Games, of course, tons of money, but there's one called the DBX Fitness Championships in Dubai that Kong did last year and a couple other guys. And it was comparable money to the CrossFit Games, but obviously much less competitive because it wasn't the CrossFit Games.
Yeah. One of the athletes I coach went over there, and she competed. And they said it was really like a really big deal. It was like, it was serious. I mean, it wasn't like a little, you know, but it was like a local kind of thing where, like, it might be a bunch of money and sponsors. It was a legit deal, like, you know, trying to be like the CrossFit Games. So that's pretty cool. I mean, there's definitely a ton of money coming into these things. There's a lot of money floating around, you know, up for grabs. And I think it's kind of a matter of when the competition becomes something that dictates, okay, now it's time for people to start putting up a lot of money, because you can capture the talent, you can capture the sales, you can capture the, you know, the investment of money into the prizes and stuff will draw the people that draw the sales, right?
Yeah, and so much of it is about the packaging.
Yeah,
for sure. Is how good the live stream is. If it's such a good live stream that's like, this could be on TV.
Right.
And, yeah, we talked about this in an episode a few weeks ago. It was called Making Powerlifting More Competitive, and talked about some different format ideas that could be potentially more interesting to a viewer. But the biggest thing is, if powerlifting or weightlifting is going to make a bunch of money, it's, you know, or have big prize money, that means the advertisers have to be wanting to put money into it.
Yeah.
And that has to be something that's compelling for people to watch. In my opinion, that means you have to tell a story, you know, the story of the U.S. Open. And a story needs characters, so you need to develop the people, you know, who we're going to talk about here as we preview the, you know, Yuri Belkins, Larry Wheels, Kevin Oakes of the world. Show people who they are, not just they lift this much, they lift that much. That's not compelling to anyone besides us, you know? Yeah. And it's only barely compelling to me at points with that. But to capture a casual viewer and create a story to that. So, yeah, I know that they have a very big live stream promise.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
The Big Dogs live stream I heard was great. It was playing in the back as we were lifting. So it'll be interesting, the type of vision they have for this and where they can go with it. So
I guess the actual competitors now is what's
people now
who's going
to
win it.
Yeah, now people got to show up and lift the weights.
Yeah.
Thank you to Virus International, sponsor of the Jug Life podcast. Visit virusintl.com and use Jug, JUGG, for 10% off your next order.
Who gets the money?
Three categories. We're going to give you some previews on here. We have lightweight men, women, heavyweight men, all battling for, I believe, $35,000 for the first place in each category, 10,000 for second, 5,000 for third, and that is on Wilkes formula. So, you know, people will try and weigh in at their weight classes because there's prize money to be had to win the weight class, but they're going to, you know, want to weigh in as light as possible, really, to, you know, or finding that sweet spot of weighing in light plus being able to lift the biggest weights. And they've had a lot of lifters, a lot of guys have pulled out of the meet, myself included, because of some injuries, but still extremely stacked lineup.
Yeah.
So we're going to kind of give you our favorites, or, you know, the perceived favorites, maybe some dark horse candidates for who are going to get in the mix for the money, and then give you a top three prediction. So starting with the lightweight men, which is going to be 148s, 165s, and 181s. I believe they're going 198s and up.
Oh, really?
As the heavyweights. And I may be wrong there, but I'm pretty sure that's the case, which I find odd. Yeah,
that's, well, that 198's rough because you got some 198s that are just super strong.
Yeah, but...
And they could crush... Well, yeah, that's hard. That's an odd choice. It is a little small to be in that middle. Because really, you got... It's 24-hour weigh-in, right?
Yeah.
That's the... Like, you got guys in a 198 walking around at...
220.
220. Yeah. And then you got 220s walking around at 250.
Yeah. But, so, it's going to be 181s and down for the lightweight men. In that, you have the world record holder in wraps and the world record holder in sleeves in the 165 class. And that's Radoslav Petkov and Kyle Keough, respectively. Petkov has made 17:30 at 165. As I mentioned, he is the current world record holder there. Kyle Keough is like 16:50 at 165 in sleeves. So tremendous lifters. Petkov, I don't believe, has competed for maybe over a year, but had kind of been going back and forth. Originally entered in this were the last three guys to hold the wrapped world record. Petkov, Micah Marino, and Paul Nguyen were all entered. I didn't see Micah's name on the roster anymore, or Paul Nguyen, so they've both backed out. But he would have had then the four most recent world record holders for the 165 class between wraps and sleeves. So that's going to be, you know, very, very competitive class. And then the 181s is stacked. If I had to say, you know, the more well-known choice as the favorite, I think, is Anthony Hobika. He's a lifter out of, I think, upstate New York, like Syracuse area. He has totaled 1,900 at 181. He and Malik Dreerstein had been sort of going back and forth with the world record at the 181s. And recently, in the animal cage, he took a page out of the old CWS playbook with the fast total and took what he said were his projected openers for the U.S. Open all in under 1 minute. Okay. He totaled like 18:20 in 1 minute. Yeah, not having cut weight to 181s, he's probably, you know, 195-ish.
Right, right.
But he's looking very, very, very strong. You know, going through his Instagram, it's a 705 for two squat, 465 for two bench.
Jeez.
You know, projecting to a 580, maybe 580 plus Wilkes.
That's big.
Yeah. Petkov, not a real active on social media guy. One squat video that I saw didn't list the weight. Looked like 635, maybe, yeah. And it said it was for a triple.
Right.
So, that's very strong.
Very, very strong, yeah. He's a good deadlifter, too, right?
Yeah, he's just, you know, solid
lifter.
Solid in all three. I think 285, 195, 302 are his PRs.
Okay.
So, but yeah, so he's sitting on 1730, Hobika with 1900. So moving on to kind of maybe the dark horse, a little bit lesser known or less expected of them lifters in the lightweight men's class. One guy who I was not very familiar with, but in the bit of research for this, was very, very impressed by his Instagram videos and stuff, is a lifter out of Texas named Ben Pollock. It's a 181 with a 1908 total.
Wow.
800-pound deadlift.
At 181?
Yeah, shredded. Very impressive physique.
Wow. Man, this is a serious competition in this class.
Yeah. So, you know, with 181s has two guys in it who have totaled over 1,900 in competition before. Ben Pollock, yeah, and I think rightfully so. People are maybe trying to be a little bit more secretive about their training these last couple weeks, because I wasn't necessarily seeing on him a lot of heavy singles that he was posting up. But, you know, if there's 35 grand on the line, I probably don't want everyone to know.
Yeah, I could see that.
What I might be capable of there either. But obviously very, very strong lifter. Seemed to have very, you know, just solid technique and basic hard training from what I could glean from Instagram.
A real threat for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, my favorite, my pick to win the lightweight class is going to be maybe lesser known to people outside the USAPL IPF world, but is John Hack, the defending IPF world champion in the 83-kilo class. So now he'll be lifting at 82.5 on the 24-hour weigh-in instead of a 2-hour weigh-in. So last year, John Hack had a very memorable battle and the most hyped-up part of IPF Classic Worlds was Hack v. Gibbs. Brett Gibbs, great lifter from New Zealand, and John was able to come out on top on that. And John ended up being the only one of the USAPL lifters. You know, originally it was John, it was Dennis Cornelius, and then Chelsea Savitt on the women's side, who were these USAPL IPF competitors who were deciding to come over, you know, to take a shot at winning the money.
Yeah.
And in doing so, would be taking a one-year ban from IPF competition. Now, Dennis and Chelsea decided down the road that was not for them. You know, Dennis is going on to compete at IPF Worlds in Belarus in June. Chelsea is an alternate on the team. But John is, he's in it. He's in it to win it at the U.S. Open, you know, to go after a very, very big payday. So he's probably, you know, maybe the youngest competitor here. I think he's only 23, 24-ish.
Yeah.
And is making the transition sleeves to wraps. And before I started looking through the Instagram to see kind of where everyone was at and help inform these predictions, I was thinking like, oh, yeah, you know, John's really strong, but, you know, the transition to wraps, the pharmaceutical differences, you know, of being an IPF competitor versus a not, I just didn't know if it would, you know, would be there. I'm sure he would lift impressively. But then as I got looking at the numbers, he's done in training a 744 squat, a 468 bench, and a 722 deadlift for a 1934 training total. And, you know, all factors considered, he's, you know, my favorite to win, I think.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. That's a really solid total for a IPF lifter.
Yeah.
I mean, the wraps obviously bring it up somewhat, but I mean not by a significant margin. It's not like he's putting a suit on or anything.
Yeah. I mean, between wraps, deadlift bar, different weigh-in.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe just a slightly less strict judging standard.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the final of our dark horses in the lightweight men's is an athlete coached by me, Kevin Torres, the pit bull. I've actually been coaching Kevin now for 5, going on 6 years. Took him to his first powerlifting meet in 2011, August 2011, the SPF Power Station Pro-Am.
Oh, nice.
Cincinnati, Ohio. Actually in the Cincinnati Convention Center, though. Not in like a VFW hall or the ballroom of a Days Inn. And Kevin's just he's a phenomenally strong lifter, and he's had an incredible training cycle. Kevin is a guy who, you know, as he kind of did a couple meets when he was young in high school, and then, you know, was trying to play college football and stuff, and then has only maybe come back to powerlifting the last two and a half years. And it's always been good squat, good bench, deadlifted badly that day. You know, maybe he was trying to make these hard weight cuts and couldn't make weight, and then he'd squat bad, bench and deadlift well. It was always, you know, 2 out of 3 lifts he would do well at the meet. And, you know, the training cycle has been incredible. He's done 665, 425, 675 in training for 1765 training total, which is 35 pounds over the world record in the 165s.
Wow.
So I'm very excited for Kevin.
He's in great shape.
Yeah, we've got some new help in the weight cut with Stan Efferding guiding that process for him there. Obviously, I do not advise about weight cuts. That is not my forte. All right, you got to stay in your lane.
Why would you cut your weight?
So I'm really excited for Kevin. I think, you know, he's a guy that no one is looking at as like he might be up in the money, but Kevin Torres is bringing it. So if I had to pick top three in the lightweight men, I'd say in first place. Well, let's go in third place. I think will be the winner of the 165s. So that, again, is going to be between Kyle Keough, the world record holder in sleeves, Radoslav Petkov, the world record holder in wraps, and then I think it really a three-way battle between the two of them and Kevin Torres. And what's going to be so much different about this meet and kind of, I guess, what's lost in a lot of powerlifting meets these days is real competition, head-to-head competition. And people who lift in the USAPL and lift in the IPF have gotten this a lot more. I'll talk about that a bit more in a second. But it's not just going to be about about taking really aggressive attempts and potentially making this huge total. It's going to be about making 8 or 9 lifts and building your total throughout the day. Because no one's winning $35,000 going 5 for 9.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not going to happen, particularly not when you have multiple world record holders in the weight class. Yeah. So in that 165 kind of three-way battle, the person who makes 8 or 9 lifts is going to be the winner, and I think they're probably coming in third on the lightweight men for Wilkes, and my biased opinion is that that's going to be Kevin Torres. I think this is the one where he puts all three lifts together, very similarly to how, you know, a month ago, Marissa had never had a meet where she did, you know, had great squat, bench, and deadlift all in one day. It was always 2 out of 3. She did 3 out of 3, all perfect, 9 for 9 day, world record total.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to keep that trend of world record totals, perfect days for really short Mexican people. That's foreshadowing, I think.
Is it actually a short Mexican person, or is it sort of the average?
You know, Marissa's uncles and stuff are like 6'2".
I don't believe you.
Her grandma, she said, was like 5'8".
That's a giant.
Her mom is 4'10". Her sister's like 4'9 or 4'10 too.
Wow. Marissa's 5 feet tall.
She's a small person.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we got to keep that trend going, Kevin, of near midget Mexican lifters coached by Chad making 9 for 9 world record days.
There you go. So the 165s are those three. What's the prize money for the, do you have any idea of the prize money for winning the weight classes? Is it insignificant?
1,500.
Oh, that's pretty good.
1,000, okay, something in that ballpark.
So it's legit.
Yeah. I mean, if there wasn't 35,000 for first in Wilkes, people would be like, shit, 1,500 for first
right
in the weight class.
That's very
pumped.
True.
Yeah. So that's going to be phenomenal to watch on Sunday. My pick for second place in the lightweight men will be Anthony Hobica. He's got the 1,900 total out there. Again, tremendous three-way battle. I think, you know, a lot of great lifters. And none of what we're saying today is to discount anyone who's in there.
Yeah.
We only have so much time, and I only have so much energy to follow people lifting, you know, doing squats, bench, and deadlifts on Instagram. Shockingly, not all I think about all day. But he's just been very, very consistent for a number of years. Put up big totals, seems to be in phenomenal shape. I think lifts to a good standard. That's going to be, you know, another big piece of this is the USPA is a federation regarded with very good, consistent judging. I have a lot of respect for what they do. They run great meets. They know that, you know, the court of public opinion, the court of public powerlifting opinion, probably the most harsh court there is going to be watching. every single one of these squats, yep. every single one of these bench pauses and lockouts, every single one of these deadlift lockouts. And I'm expecting, you know, from what I've seen on in the athletes page for this, as I was entered, so I've been privy to that stuff, and just everything else, that they're looking to showcase their federation
yeah.
and their judging. And, I mean, even Gracie, the Gracie Vanesse, the meet director, last week or 2 weeks ago posted in the athlete on the athlete's Facebook page for this, like, I'm seeing a lot of high squats in training. Like, you guys better get this shit down. So
Gracie's a very direct young lady.
Yeah. So if we've got the former West Side multiply girl telling you that you got high squats, you better get this shit down.
Yeah. That is true.
Yeah. They're clearly going to try and make a statement with the judging. They're not going to let bullshit pass on it. And that's going to make a huge difference as well. So,
yeah,
Anthony Hobika, my pick for second place in the lightweight men by Wilkes, means my pick for first is John Hack. Part of me didn't want to do this because of things like the wraps being a newer thing to him, deadlift bar being a newer thing to him. But I feel like that is very outweighed by that he's lifted against the best competition yeah. of anyone in this, the most direct head-to-head competition where it was, I need to make all my lifts to win. He did that very successfully last year at IPF Worlds against Brett Gibbs, a tremendous, tremendous lifter. You know, both guys battling for the world record. So he knows the two most important things. He knows how to lift a shitload of weight, and he knows how to win a powerlifting meet.
That's such a huge thing, because in powerlifting, I mean, weightlifting and powerlifting are very similar, but in powerlifting, your strategy is kind of set in stone when you show up. You don't have these chances to, like, I'm gonna do this, then if I make it, I'll go there. And honestly, and just my personal opinion, I think a lot of powerlifters are horrible at strategizing for competition. Just they lack a fundamental understanding of, like, what do we need to accomplish and what's the best way to do that. And a huge part of it is just a matter of that, like, picking arbitrary numbers that have no significance, and I'm going to take this PR attempt on my second attempt, and then if I'm good, like, I'll go for, like, another 100 pounds, and I might make it. Like, maybe it'll be Christmas that day, and I'll do really well. And I think that someone like Hack is worlds ahead, like you said, because he's already understood the powerlifting as a sport, yeah. not powerlifting as a showcase, I guess, or as a test day, you know?
He's not, you know, he hasn't been doing meets. I'm sure the last three meets he's probably done were USAPL Nationals, IPF Raw Worlds, and the Arnold. So those are the last three meets he's done before this one, to my knowledge. Maybe one other in between Nationals and this. Those are three meets where you have to lift very well to win.
Right.
It's not three meets where, hey, I can go, you know, balls to the wall and just take the biggest attempts I want because there's nothing on the line, or I'm going to win on my openers kind of thing.
Yeah.
So he knows how to compete. I think that gives John Hack the edge. He's had to lift to the greatest standard of judging.
Yeah.
With that said, his squats and wraps, they're higher. Okay. They're definitely higher than what what he was doing in sleeves in the IPF, as that's probably to be expected.
Yeah.
But
he might, yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. The wraps are definitely a different, they're different. You know, the skill is different, the speed, the feel, the depth, like your proprioception is different.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the wraps in a meet, you bury it more than you expect because you're not really sure where you're at. Sometimes you're high as shit and you're, you know, you feel like you can't go any lower. So it's like, that's the wild card.
Yeah, that's the one thing giving me big pause on picking John Hack is he has so much less experience in wraps than these other guys, and doing it in training is one thing, but when it's going and his name is called and it's you got to make this to keep yourself in contention to win, you know, for a 22-year-old guy, he's probably doubling the amount of money he makes each year.
Salary.
The Yeah, does the pressure get to him? I think he's going to rise to that pressure and make it happen.
Yeah.
So John Hack, my pick for the lightweight men. Grind Sports Nutrition is the official supplement provider of Team Juggernaut. Designed by Renaissance Periodization, there are no-nonsense supplements to fuel your hardest training. Use JUG10 at grindsupplements.com. Moving on to the women's powerlifting. I think this is probably a two-way battle for first. We're not going to go through class by class, and that's just we just don't know as much about the women's lifters. Sorry,
it's based on Wilks, and really to have the biggest Wilks, to be the best, you're going to have a great total. And while there's a lot of girls that are pretty strong that have a good deadlift or a big squat and deadlift, the two women in this fight are, one of them is Susan Salazar, who's done a 600 plus Wilks, and the other is one of my old athletes, Christy Hawkins, who's creeping up on that 600 Wilks. This is Christy's. This will be her first meet ever in wraps, and she's training with Dan Green now. So I'm sure she's a great performer, has all those things. Susan, same thing, rock solid 9 for 9 meets. She's probably had more meets going 8 for 9 or 9 for 9 than anything else. So that's you basically have those two battling it out. Susan's Wilks is probably a little bit ahead in the start. It just depends on how everything pans out, but those two are definitely the picks for the top there. Really, really going to be huge lifting from them, I would say.
Yeah, what has Christy squatted in reps?
I know she's done. She did 550 that I've seen.
Like 250 kilos. So.
But I'm sure she squatted more. Sure she squatted more than 550. The way 550 looked.
And Salazar, there's a lot of different bars going on, a lot of bands and chains going on, so it's
hard to say.
It's tough to make predictions off of that.
She always performs well.
She is. She's a very, very solid lifter. So that's going to be a great battle, and there's going to be a lot of very impressive lifting done by the women there. I'll just throw this in, I guess. The women's powerlifting in the USAPL and the IPF, I feel, is a distinct cut above the rest of the world, or the rest of the powerlifting world, that it would be very, very difficult for the U.S. Open women's lifters, drug testing situations aside, to go into the world of USAPL, two-hour weigh-in, judging, stiff bar, and beat the Kimberly Walford, Jen Thompson, Marissa Indes of the world in head-to-head competition. I don't foresee a time where they ever get on one platform and have the opportunity to do that because of the restrictions of the IPF. I don't know that it would be something that the USAPL lifters would think like, I want to do this and compete on a an unlevel playing field. But they're great lifters. There's going to be great lifting going on at the U.S. Open, but it is, I think, that the pinnacle of women's powerlifting is happening in the USAPL, in the IPF. If you watch our episode from a couple weeks back, Iron Sisters, those four women are just strong as shit.
There's definitely a discrepancy too when you get into the untested feds, where the variation between when women are in tested feds versus not tested feds, the discrepancy is much bigger. It has a much more significant impact for women.
Yes.
Right? And so you're going to see probably more of the talented girls that want to choose to avoid that going into the USAPL, whereas with the men, the discrepancy may not be as significant simply because you have just very, very talented people that end up in these things one way or another. I think Ray Williams is a great example of, he could walk into this meet too and probably hold his own, if not do.
Yeah.
I mean, You know what I mean? Like, and clearly he's clean.
I'm sure he would appreciate a 25-kilo bar when squatting 1,050.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true, you know? So it's different. I think it's just that the discrepancy is so great with the women that you're going to see more of them shift to one side or the other, and it's going to polarize more towards, like Chad is saying, towards the USAPL, because why would you even want to mess around in the other federations if you, you know?
Yeah, just from a cultural standpoint, I think, you know, the drug use is much more acceptable on the men's side of things. And that's just going to mean that the men's lifters in the USAPL and IPF are incredible too, and probably also the best lifters in the world. But it's, I think, a much more debatable, you know, Milanichev v. Williams, you know, comparing those two versus comparing the top women's across the tested and untested feds. Yeah. Here's a video of Christy squatting 245, 540 for a double in reps.
Yeah.
About 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. I know she did more than the 250. I probably shouldn't say it because I'm sure she might not want anyone to know. Strategy. But yeah, she's an incredibly strong squatter.
And she's incredibly strong all around.
Yeah, very
and
solid.
I think that's what's maybe more rare to find in the women's lifters is you get people who are great. More often great in two lifts,
yeah.
Squat and deadlift, squat and bench, maybe less likely bench and deadlift, but more rare to have someone who is tremendous across all three. I think that's why Marissa has been so successful, because she's, you know, not the best in any one lift, but, you know, top three, maybe four in all three lifts. And Christy Hawkins, very much the same, world record squat and sleeves at 165s, American record bench. You know, benching, what, 325-ish, 319?
Yeah, 319, I think.
Yeah, and then had the world record deadlift as well, pulling like 540.
Yeah.
Breaking Kim Walford's record. Again, different circumstance.
Yeah, yeah.
Different bar, all that stuff. But great at all three. And that's just a huge advantage here, because if you have someone who's already, you know, who's relying on, oh, I'm this great squatter, but then they miss the third, maybe that advantage is gone. But when you're solid across all three, there's a little bit more flexibility in
also,
the way members can be selected.
You know, also, Marissa and Christy, clearly they've had exposure to incredibly handsome coaches.
Yeah.
But strategy plays a big role in that, because both of those women compete very well, and they both put together excellent totals. Same with, like, Susan, right? Mm-hmm. Solid lifting performances equal big totals. You only get credit for the lifts you make. And so you're going 8 for 9, 9 for 9, you know, those are the people that are winning, and it's not going to be the guys, you know, there's a freak out there, sure, who makes one of each lift and could blow everyone out of the water, but it's, you know, those guys are also the ones, you know, it's like the home run hitters, right? They're also the big strikeout artists. Yeah. I mean, so, yeah.
Yeah. So I think Hawkins, our pick, women's.
I think that's a tough one. Salazar and Hawkins are close. I would go with Hawkins, but I think it's going to be a tough battle. Yeah,
I guess as fans talking there.
Yeah, I would go with Christy for sure.
And
yeah.
Susan, super nice.
Super nice lady, yeah.
Yeah, but
yeah,
we're picking Hawkins. So.
Yeah, that's what I go with.
So moving on to the big ones, the everyone's favorite, the heavyweights. Again, some people have dropped out. Milanichev had dropped out. If Milanichev was in, he would win.
Yeah.
He cannot be beat. Whatever he would have needed to win, he will put on the bar.
Yeah, he would just do it.
But still an incredible lineup of lifters remaining. So these top favorites are going to be...
And this is 220 and up.
This is 198.
Well, 198 and up.
198 and
right,
up.
Right, 198.
198 and up. I hope I'm not misspeaking on that. I'm pretty sure it's 198 and up. I think 220 and up would have been a better call.
Yeah, probably a little better, but...
In the 198s, we have the 181 world record holder, Malik Dreierstein. So he's, you know, kind of the first of this group of favorites, of, you know, well-known favorites probably.
Yeah.
Incredibly strong squatter, incredibly strong bencher.
Yeah, his bench is ridiculous.
The he won't need to have too significant a weight cut into the 198s. He probably walks at 210.
Yeah.
He's about the same height as Kevin, I'd say. He's in like the 5'3".
He's that tall, really. He's only that tall.
Yeah, he's very, very muscular. Like,
wow.
Massive.
His back is humongous. I mean, he's ridiculous. Yeah.
But, you know, deadlift grip issues. And,
oh, really?
And just watching him lift, you know, watching him come out of the USAPL where he was a single ply lifter, maybe into early 2015, his first meet that I was aware of outside of the USAPL, I think, was the Chicago Fit Expo, which is maybe like a May-ish meet that he did in May 2015, and came right out and was right at the world record at 181 in sleeves. And then the next meet, way above the record. And then Hobika broke it, and then Malik came back and broke it again and just kept pushing. You know, 1951 at 181.
That's just giant.
And it was precise, phenomenal lifting. And, you know, frankly, watching his videos since seeing him compete last year, last July at USPA Nationals, where he had a very strong day but not quite what he wanted. And, you know, when your goal is new all-time total world record, it's very, you know, any small mistake can seem like a disappointment for the lifter, but still was a tremendous performance. He went to the to Boss of Bosses after that, was in maybe his first time in knee wraps.
Yeah, it might have been.
Or not, you know, hadn't had much experience in knee wraps. And his squats were significantly worse, I thought, from a depth standpoint, from a standard standpoint.
Oh, yeah. That was, we were both there, right?
I wasn't there.
You want to tell one?
Just watching. That was 2 years ago.
Oh, right, right. Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking of the other one, the middle school.
Yeah. He's tremendously strong, and his Instagram account is private, so I actually didn't get to see any of his recent lifts. I'd seen him doing a lot more in the bands and chains specialty bar type of world than I'd seen previous to that.
Not a good sign.
Never a good sign. So I don't know. He's tremendously strong. I very much have enjoyed watching his lifting. If he squats to the standard that he did at Boss of Bosses last year, he will have a very short day at the U.S. Open, I think. Again, I expect the judging to be very strict.
Yeah.
That they're looking to showcase the Federation. They're looking to send a message about what the USPA is all about there. If he lifts to the standard that he's definitely capable of, he's going to be in the mix for some big numbers, as he has before posted maybe Wilkes in the 595 range. I believe his 1951 181 world record total is about a 595 Wilkes. So
what did we say the Wilkes for the
lightweight
Hack,
guys?
You think Hack is? Or that a range?
Those guys are probably in the 590 range.
So we're looking at like the winner of this, the winner of that. Like 600 Wilkes is really the number to break to be in contention.
For the lightweight guys, if someone makes 600, I would be shocked if they were not the winner.
Yeah.
I could see the top three, you know, maybe third place being in like a 570 kind of range, 565. Yeah. You know, so many times when big meets come up like this, and you know, I was probably an example of this myself at Big Dogs last year, is from a fan's perspective, you see all the great lifting happening in training, and you think everyone is there's going to be six guys above the world record.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that myself as a competitor when I first saw the list of for Big Dogs last year. I was like, there could be five guys go for 2400 here.
Yeah.
You know, but when the rubber meets the road at the competition, people start missing. You know, and then it becomes who can make the lifts, who can win the day, not who's the best. You know, if we did this 10 times, who would win 9 times? It's the one who just, you only have to win one.
Yeah.
You just have to win that day. So, you know, will there be incredible performances? Yes. Will it be, you know, this guy breaks the world record on his second deadlift, and then this guy comes back and breaks it on his second, and then he breaks it on his third, and then the other guy breaks it on his third? That would be awesome to watch as a fan, but I'm not holding my breath for that to happen. So Dairsteen, one of our first favorites for the heavyweight men, moving up to the 220s.
This is where the money's at. I mean, this is where the
the machine, cyborg, Yuri Belkin. Yuri Belkin, 21.93 at 220, world record. If he puts it all together, Yuri Belkin is the winner. by a lot.
If he
puts most of it together,
yeah,
he's probably the winner.
If it was in the SPF with straps, we'd probably see a 1,000-pound deadlift.
Oh, yeah. If it was in the SPF strap division. Yuri Belkin is, if you're looking to have really good powerlifting technique,
yeah,
you can just put Yuri Belkin videos on a loop. You know, that could be an entire deadlift clinic.
Flawless.
Project the Yuri Belkin video on the wall.
Yeah.
Repeat. Tape the people's eyes open. Make them watch it until it's fully ingrained
flawless
into their brain. And he's great at all three. He's not going to be affected by a big weight cut. You know, he walks around maybe in the mid-220s. Easy. Couple pounds down to make 220. He's good at all three. You know, we'll squat over 800.
Yeah.
We'll bench over 500. We'll likely pull over 900. I could definitely see Belkin putting, you know, a Wilkes number up in the 620 plus type of range. If it's on in the deadlift and he's holding on to the bar, you know, is his third deadlift 970?
Yeah, in my personal experience, when there's money on the line, Russian dudes do some crazy shit.
Yeah.
They are willing to go hard.
Yeah, so Belkin is, I think the prohibitive favorite of this group. Other, you know, top names.
Super, super strong. Well,
so going on to the 242s, a bit of an interesting situation there because we'll have Larry Williams, and Kevin Oak. Larry recently announced that he will not be wearing wraps for this competition. He is the sleeves world record holder, 21.71 at 242. Broke my man T. Papula's record. T was at 20.99. The record had been broken when T broke it. It was the fourth time it had been broken in like a 3-month span. John Rivas, Andrew Herbert, Larry Wheels, two of them breaking in the same meet. T breaking it a month or so after that. And then Larry's like, oh, well, let me just put 80 pounds.
Yeah.
Or 70 pounds on this record. If you watch his training,
he's a freak. Monster.
6:17 bench video last week. Not with the wraps on the elbows this time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Holy
so
shit.
In training, Larry has done 837, 617.
He squatted 837.
Yeah. The heaviest deadlift video I could find. Yeah, and trying to make a prediction off of it was him doing 826 for three with reverse bands. You know, I used to dabble in the world of reverse band deadlifting when I was coached by Josh Bryant, and we would do one rep, one single,
One
total rep of reverse band deadlifting. And both meets that I did that's the same thing that I deadlifted at the meet. Yeah,
so he might do a triple at the meet.
So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. If he was able to replicate that squat and that bench, and then put, you know, I think he's pulled 832. It seems like his deadlift has increased.
He's an incredibly strong deadlift. He pulled 400, right?
That would be news to me.
He hasn't pulled 400? What did he pull at the meet?
At which meet?
The SPF meet.
I think his PR is 832, like 380.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah.
But if his deadlift has improved, which I'm sure it has because his other lifts seem to be improving quite rapidly, an 850 deadlift is probably a very realistic number. Putting those three together, 837 or 832, 617, and let's call it 850, that's 2303.
That's
in sleeves.
That's insane.
At 242. Dan Green's wrapped record at 242 is 2210. It was one of, you know, one of, if not the best record, I think, when it was made.
Yeah, it was huge.
Still standing. For the possibility to even exist that he goes 90 pounds beyond that.
That's just crazy.
In sleeves.
That's just crazy.
That would be, if he did that, that would be a 6:15 Wilkes.
How much do you think?
2303 at 242.
How much do you think, do you think that the $10,000 second place prize is such an enticing prize that a lot of guys are planning more for that as a matter of let the guy who's winning, like you have one scenario, everyone fights for this first place thing and everyone's going crazy for it.
And missing
possibly
lifts.
Missing lifts, possibly ending up in third place or worse, bombing out or fourth or whatever. versus the people saying, okay, realistically, this is what I can do. I know if I watch the competition and let them kind of fight it out or let people make those mistakes, I'm going for a $10,000. Because a $10,000 payday is fucking great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's excellent. So how much of their strategy may be, you know, I think the younger the coaches, the younger the lifter, the more you're going to see the let's go for broke, you know, put on the bar, I got to make this, versus a little more experienced people, you know, Bell can come in and say, hey, I'll really shore up this second place $10,000 prize, and if it's in the cards, I'll go for the top. You know, there's got to be some that could be a big factor in terms of people really pushing themselves ridiculously hard versus everyone kind of like, you know, shooting for a little bit more conservative. They know they're going to get, you know, the lights and this and that's going to be bigger. Or another scenario, everyone knows the dredging is stricter. Things are more tight. People pull back their numbers a little, but then that gives this opening of the door to people taking foolish attempts and saying, oh, now I can beat them because everyone's kind of going a little more conservatively.
That's
reverse. Where
that's what we'll have to find out on the day.
Yeah,
and I think that's a big, well, you know, to paraphrase our friend James Smith, you know, in regards to something like Larry Wheels doing 2,300, you know, that is a phenomenal number, but is really arbitrary.
Right.
It is a construct of the Industrial Revolution's, you know, decision to make
psychological revolution.
Yeah. Making weight measuring units in these specific increments. But, you know, 2303 is a phenomenal number. But 2270 is a 100-pound PR and an insane total, too.
Yeah.
So, and is that the difference of these little, you know, 2.5 kilos less here, 5 kilos less there, 8 for 9, 9 for 9 kind of day versus chasing the arbitrary 2300? And, you know, and falling short and maybe making 5 for 9 or 6 for 9. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah.
You know, when I first saw that he was going in sleeves, I was like, oh, that's, you know, I guess he's out of the money. And then I actually started looking more at the videos and doing some math and was like, maybe he's not out of the money.
Yeah.
Joining him in the 242 class will be his now sometimes training partner. That's got to be fucking wild. The 220 class world record holder in wraps, Kevin Oak.
Yeah.
Kevin has training total that I've seen, training numbers I've seen are 892, 893 in the squat, 405 kilos, a 512 bench, and a 801 deadlift, as well as a 775 for 2 deadlift. So that's projecting him probably in the 590 to 610 range for the Wilks.
That is huge.
You know, Belkin, 606, you know, but these guys are projecting to more. I think Belkin will do more than that, but it's not, you know, it's by no means a one-man show.
Who else do we have in there, actually?
We have the wildest wild card. Leader from True Lies.
Oh.
The villain from True Lies, leader of the Crimson Jihad. Zahir Khudurov. Zahir is nuts. He's crazy.
Zahir is there.
Yeah.
People may lose limbs.
They may lose limbs. Or
thousands of pounds may be lifted.
Yeah, people may lose out on $35,000 as Zahir takes that Finland back with him.
Something else.
Yeah, Zahir, I mean, Zahir's mental fortitude bordering on possible insanity when it comes to
it is
to
something else.
Squatting and you know, in 2013, Zahir squatted 400 kilos for the first time, and it was this phenomenal performance. Maybe even early 2014.
He was at 242 there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Later that year, at the GPA Worlds, the first time that I traveled to Australia, he squatted 450 kilos, 992. At that meet, I think he opened at 390, so like 865, 870-ish kind of range. And when he unracked it, I thought, well, this guy's bombing out. Like,
yeah,
he unracked it from the mono. Yeah, like a fucking earthquake underneath his feet was happening. He's just shaking everywhere, hits the hole, crushes it. Goes up, maybe 920. on his way down, still shaking like crazy, like falls over sideways with the weight on his back.
Yeah.
Goes up like 9:48. shaking, crushes it. Fourth attempt, 9:92.
Yeah.
Like, to have the mental strength to come to increase your squat that much in a short time, like, you know what happens if you fuck the squat up? The bar just smashes you. Like, it's much different, I think, than building your mind around pulling a huge deadlift, which takes incredible, you know, mental fortitude as well.
Yeah.
But to put it on your back when it feels so heavy, as it clearly did to him, there's no way that a guy is shaking like that if it's not. And then for another 6 months after his 450, he's doing 475, 480.
And, like, you know, it's also like the training squats, you see, they're high as shit.
I mean, they're high as shit. Are the spotter's hands on them?
Yeah.
But it's still 500 kilos.
Yeah. I mean, it's like that in and of itself, just the act of doing that to yourself.
Yeah.
That's pretty nuts.
He's a trip.
Yeah.
Really, really nice guy
in
person. I would not. It's. Yeah,
not the Crimson Jihad that you thought.
No, not the kill motherfucker, kill guy kilos, 500
come
kilos kill.
Kill, yeah.
That you
the
see
poems,
on Instagram.
Those poems he writes.
He is a wordsmith. incredibly nice guy. But, you know, Zahir he's a wild card.
He's insane.
You know, last year, the same meet on a different federation, but he came out and bombed. He went, dumped the bar. Yeah, he tried to open at like 1,060 or something. Dumped the bar on his opener. I don't understand how Daniel Bell's fingers stayed attached to his hand after getting his hand trapped between the bar and the spotting straps. And then missed it twice after that. Is he going to try and open like that again? If he does, I would expect a similar result.
Yeah.
I would expect, you know, hopefully not dumping the bar, but with having to walk it out too.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's that's
there's
be...
that one big caveat. They have to walk the weight out.
You gotta get to the squat before you
shit.
Can
shit. That's lift gonna
it.
Be
Yeah. So
that's just I can't imagine. I can't conceive of what that looks like for Zahir.
Yeah, I'm gonna give him a wide berth. If they need extra spotters, no thank you. I will not be taking that. So if he tries to open 1,050 or something, I'm guessing bomb out. But if he is more reasonable with that, maybe, you know, tries to go 950, 1,000, 1,050, build some momentum into it.
Yeah.
We could be looking at something else. He's a huge bencher, too. I mean, he's benched 280 kilos, 617.
Yeah.
And has pulled probably with straps, but like 400 kilos.
Yeah.
So while Zahir is a wild card, you know, and is a little bit of a loose cannon when it comes to this kind of thing, he could just come out and just slap that wild card down. Well, wild card, bitches!
That's why he's the wild card.
That is why he's the
he's
wild
card.
He's
not dressed crazy. If it all goes to plan, if there is a plan, if things happen in his favor,
yes,
you could see something unbelievable happening.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm a betting man on this, I'm probably betting on bomb out. But if they're going to give me some incredible odds for Zahir going like 1,050, 600, 850, numbers that he's done, all of those, you know, he's can potentially do that.
Yeah.
That adds up to 2,500 and a 650 Wilkes on a perfect day lifting as a 275.
Monstrous Wilkes.
Yeah. So a stretch probably, but
I saw he said he was going to do 550 squat.
As his opener?
Well, when else are you going to take 550?
What, 450, 500, 550?
I guess.
It was 550, 550, 550.
Yeah.
Who knows?
You need a couple to get the groove, then you got it the last one.
Yeah.
The thing is, when he does stand up with them, they just move.
Yes.
You know? If the squat was from the bottom up, Zahir would be... He would have squatted 600 kilos, probably.
Well, he is like my boy Derek Kendall in that way.
Yeah.
Derek, who I still think might be the strongest man ever.
Yeah.
His squat walkouts, it was like he would try and sneak the bar out of the rack. he was trying to get it out of the rack and get it into position before the bar knew what was going on. Like, The bar was asleep, and he was going to pick it up ever so gently and just bring it out here. And then he would hit the hole after this shaky as shit, passive walkout. And they'd hit the hole with 9-15 in sleeves and just murder it.
Yeah, just no effort at all. Just the bar just flew.
Yeah.
You know?
And Zahir is in that same way. Like, if he can get it to where he can begin the squat or get it to the bottom, he's bringing it back to the top. But we'll see. It could be.
Who knows what's going on there?
He's exciting. It's going to be exciting.
It will be fun.
Dark horses in the heavyweight category. I can't see anyone else besides those five that we already mentioned getting into the money for the top three, but there's going to be other phenomenal lifting. In the 242s, former world record holder in sleeves, Andrew Herbert, Herbie the Love Bug.
Super, super strong, dude.
Super strong, super jacked.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys really, all jacked, really except, jacked.
I mean, Belkin's muscular, but Belkin, if you had a contest like who can look the most like a plumber, Belkin might win that contest.
Yeah, if it was just a lineup beforehand.
Hide amongst normal people, Belkin would win hands down.
Yeah.
Herbert would lose by far.
Well,
Herbert and
Larry Wheels and Kevin
Zahir would also have a hard time.
all these guys are, it's like you use muscles to lift weights. Or something.
It's like being jacked helps you lift weights.
Yeah. Herbert has made 20.94 in sleeves.
There's a video of him doing like a 390 double in the squat.
Yeah, so he really just squatted 865 for two in reps. I couldn't find a ton of bench videos. I saw a 495 for three in the slingshot.
Yeah.
It was a red slingshot, so it probably means he can bench about 495.
Yeah.
Then the deadlift is going to be the interesting one. Big deadlifter, but the two most recent ones I could find were, 2 or 3 weeks ago, 870, which by his own admission was a soft lockout.
Yeah.
And then 400 kilos this past week.
Dropped.
Which he lost on grip right at the top. Now, if he had a perfect day, maybe approaching 600 Wilkes. He's training there at Boss. He's with Dan. He's making what I feel is a similar error to what I think Dan has done with his own training, is particularly in the deadlift, where you've seen Dan pull 400 kilos in the gym, 455 kilos off of blocks. I think that they take them a little too close to competition, that is so stressful to the nervous system. Within 2 weeks of each other, I don't know if they're back-to-back weeks that he tried the 870 and 881 or a week in between that, but taking the 881 only 2 weeks out, what was clearly an absolute maximum lift that he wasn't quite able to hold on to, I don't think he'll be able to decay that fatigue and go through that whole process and replicate that same type of performance at the meet.
That's a coaching moment, advice moment from having made those mistakes before with people, and that's a hard thing for coaches or whoever you're writing your own program, whatever it is. That's a hard thing to learn and to actually realize and make the correction, because it's such a feel, psychological, tactile thing. I gotta pull a heavy weight. You feel like you're not going to be recovered, or you're not going to know how to do it, especially in like the deadlift, if you just don't feel strong. But, carrying through on the peaking, carrying through on the recovery and that final taper and making that work is a skill and also takes a lot of experience and confidence to do that well.
It is,
I think that's a really tough thing for newer lifters and newer coaches to really grasp.
I think as much psychological stuff going on with that as there is physiological. I take a lot of pride in my ability to peak, and the simplest way that I could say it, I haven't pulled 400 kilos, but we can put whatever numbers and whatever lift in here we want. You don't have to pull 400 kilos to pull 400 kilos.
Yeah.
If he would have gone, I think particularly as you get stronger and stronger and stronger, leaving that last one, that biggest one for when it counts, is very important. So maybe instead of soft locking 870 and a week or two later coming back and missing 881 with the grip, split the difference between those two, make a more confident 860, 859, or whatever that number is in there. I think 859, make that walk away from it saying, I could have done 10 pounds more. I could have done 20 pounds more.
Absolutely.
Giving that extra week of recovery. And this isn't to, you know, to criticize
Andrew
or Dan. They're phenomenal, incredible lifters.
Very smart guys.
You know, this is for the bigger audience that, you know, listening and watching, is if you trust the process and you trust the way that fitness and fatigue work with each other, you shouldn't be able to make the lift, the biggest lift in training.
Absolutely not.
There should be too much fatigue accumulated to allow that to happen. But if you can trust that making the hard lift in training, the hard but makeable lift, and then decaying fatigue and letting your body's processes do what they do as you move into the meet, you should be able to make those bigger squats, benches, and deadlifts when they matter.
Yeah, that's a really, really great point that needs to be reiterated, is that you should not be at your best prior to the meet. At your best is the peak. That's the peak of your abilities. That needs to be the day of the meet. So this is an example, but it's not Andrew we're talking about, just anybody in that situation. If you're already pulling this heavy single at 860 or 870, and the next week you're capable of pulling 880, what's happening is that you're already decaying the fatigue so much earlier than that, weeks before that, you've essentially created the peak to happen possibly earlier, right? Now, if Andrew comes and pulls 900 at 8410 or whatever.
Fuck us, right?
Yeah. Obviously, you know. But the example, you know, the trend we see from having the experience and having done this is that you're ending in a place where, okay, he's already starting to realize his fitness because he's decayed the fatigue prematurely.
Yeah, too significantly, too early.
Yes, in preparation to prepare for pulling these big singles this, you know, early. Make sense?
Yeah. And it's sort of two sides of the same coin. I think what is happening to him is he's taking the last one too close to competition.
Too soon, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, it all goes to, you don't
have
to make.
That was this week, right?
Yeah.
I almost never do I have anyone pull any deadlifts other than maybe technical work, you know, the week before the taper. So 14 days is the limit for deadlifting.
And the bigger, the stronger
the
bigger the number is, the longer that has to come, the longer that time has to be. Other kind of dark horse lifters that you may not be quite as familiar with. One guy who definitely doesn't get enough credit, he kicked my ass in Australia, and I did not see it coming. Sean Doyle.
Oh, yeah.
Sean Doyle, not big social media guy or anything, just solid-ass lifting.
Really, really good technical lifter, too.
Really good technician, good in all three lifts, is going to go and make 8 or 9 lifts. You know, he did 2309 as a, you know, we didn't weigh in, but he would have been a 308. In Australia, with more in the tank, because, you know, he could take very aggressive last two shots at a 410 kilo deadlift because I wasn't going to be able to beat him.
He
probably could have made like a 2350 there, if not 2360, something like that, and he was incredibly close to pulling the 410, which would have given him even maybe 2380. Super strong guy. I saw him bench 585 in training recently. Yeah, I would expect that he's over 925 in the squat, 580, 590 kind of range in the bench. And, yeah, he's pulled 402 before, 887. So he puts all three together. Yeah, he's going to potentially get into that 585-plus Wilkes range. And, you know, if the scenarios Max are talking about start to happen – guys take really aggressive numbers trying to go for the 35 grand. Mm-hmm. They end up even missing out on the 10 grand because they end up with 5 for 9, 6 for 9 kind of days. A guy like Sean Doyle can come along with a 9 for 9, just very solid lifting across the board, and maybe get some big money there.
Solid beard as well.
Solid beard and solid O'Doyle rules shirt game as well.
Did he have one?
He had an O'Doyle rules. Yeah. You gotta love a man with his O'Doyle rules shirt.
Oh, yeah.
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 Finally, the last lifter to talk about is going to be Andy Huang. Andy will be lifting in sleeves. He is coached by me. He's also one of our Juggernaut online coaches. Andy is my most improved lifter He's put over 300 pounds on his total in our about 20 months working together. Sold 2193 in sleeves as a 275 at the LA Fit Expo. That was by 843-507-843. That sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's just improved across the board. He's super strong, very technical, just a kind of cerebral guy about what he does. Again, he's going to be lifting in sleeves, so you know, no real chance for him to get up in the top prize money for by Wilkes, but very possible he wins the 275s, and very possible he breaks Stan Efferding's record of 22.26 in sleeves as the 275 sleeve world record, which would also beat my own PR in that, which would make the third person I would have coached who would now be stronger than me.
Well.
Ugh.
Maybe it's time to dust off the old powerlifting suit.
Let's not get our singlet all in a bunch now. But yeah, I'm very excited. Andy's gonna have a great meet, and give that 275 sleeves record a good run. Trifecta provides pre-cooked organic food delivered right to your door weekly to help fit with your Renaissance diet, fuel your hard training, improve your recovery, and make your life easier. Visit trifectanutrition.com/juggernaut. Picking the top three, the money winners for the heavyweight men. My pick, let me know what you think here, Max. I'm picking in third, Larry Wheels.
Maybe.
Just the fact that he's lifting in sleeves, not in wraps.
Yeah, that's a big disadvantage. I also think, though, that Larry is... I watched him lift it in Dublin, and...
At Dublin, California, Dublin, not Ireland.
Yeah. Incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
And it appears he's made a lot of improvements. I mean, he's really solid in his lifting. He doesn't seem to give off a lot of, like, shakiness and sort of, like, some good meets, some bad. So that's where I say he seemed a little more consistent. He hasn't done a lot, though.
Yeah.
Done as much as maybe Oak or anyone else. But
well, he's done 2171.
No, meets, competitions.
Oh.
Where you say, okay, I have a good base to draw from and say, okay, he's going to, you know, he was always squatting high or something. But.
Yeah, and doing it to, you know, probably a stricter judging standard than he's done before, as I think he's most often competed RPS, SPF stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
That could be a little tougher on him. Kevin Oak and Larry Williams are strong as shit.
They are incredible.
And if one of them's wearing wraps and one of them's wearing sleeves, I got to pick the guy wearing wraps to win. You know, in the same weight class. So I got Larry Williams in third, making just a stupid total. You know, very possibly putting 100 pounds plus on his on his own world record. But to think that he's going to go from boss of bosses in August, totaling 2095, to the record breakers in November, doing 2171, you know, so a 75-pound PR, to then go again and put 100, 130 pounds on that in the next 5 months.
What is Oak's total?
Kevin Oak's best total is, I didn't write it down, it's like 2150-something, 2160-something, at 220 in wraps.
Okay.
But his training numbers, 892, 512, 801.
Oh, they get that huge squat.
Huge squat, yeah. And, you know, Kevin was a guy who was also doing RPS meets and stuff, and his training videos and his squat, man, they all looked high.
They did the Fit Expo, and it was like...
Yeah, LA Fit Expo 2016.
Yeah.
I was thinking... One for three in the squat, bomb out maybe, and he came in, broke the 220 wraps record, lifted phenomenally, definitely made a believer out of me in terms of squat depth and all that stuff. So, yeah, I'm going to give the nod to Kevin on that one. You know, if Larry Wheels put light knee wraps on and got
Larry would
30
have
pounds out of it,
sure.
he would probably be winning, but, you know, he's making the decision he's making there. Which leaves us with our first place pick, Yuri Belkin, is just solid. I mean, there's no doubt about what he's going to do.
Yeah, his numbers will be there. If Yeah. Whatever he puts on the bar, he's probably making because he's not going to make bad attempts.
Yeah, I mean, he misses deadlifts.
Yeah, for sure.
He is not That's nearly true. As solid a number one pick as if Milanichev was competing.
Yeah.
Where Milanichev seems to, whatever is needed to lift, he would lift. Yuri Belkin, I think, is going to win. I think is going to probably make a 615 to 625 type of Wilks. But, you know, if he misses a lift here or there, like, these guys are, there's a lot of really great lifters competing, so it's gonna be interesting to see. But I would pick that as Williams in third, Oak in second, Belkin in first, and predict a new 275 class total record for Andy Huang.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I would say the Williams Oak battle is probably going to be interesting.
Yeah,
they train together.
Yeah,
you know, and they're probably pushing each other a lot. So it'd be interesting to see what those two actually drive each other to do. You know, either catching Belkin or fighting amongst each other a little bit. So
yeah, but going to be a very exciting day for powerlifting. Hopefully it is the event that everyone is hoping for.
Yeah.
You know, that there's a bunch of 8-for-9, 9-for-9 performances, world records, huge lifts, great judging standard. I know Del Mar Fairgrounds will be an excellent venue, that the live stream is awesome and all that. You know, got our fingers crossed for you here at US Open. A lot of you know, no pressure, but, you know, mm-hmm. You could kind of make it for powerlifting here. So
it all rides on you.
Going to be an exciting day. I will be in attendance both days, coaching Andy Huang on Saturday and Kevin Torres on Sunday. We'll also have a Juggernaut booth. You can stop by, get some of our new apparel, which will be debuting for the first time down there. Marissa will be at the booth. Kristen will be at the booth. Zach Bartel will be at the booth. If that means anything to you,
strap your balls on. Zach Bartel will be there.
Yeah, so it'll be a great day. Stop by, say hi, take a picture, that kind of thing. Exciting. It's going to be an exciting day for powerlifting. Coming up on the schedule this weekend, on the 15th, same day as the first day of the U.S. Open, you weightlifters who don't care about, you know, the poor, pathetic powerlifters with their lack of athleticism and whatnot, can come and learn from Maximum Montana. Joe's going to be helping you out with
Joe
that
Joe will
one
be
too.
There, yeah.
Yeah, Joanne. We have good people who are good at snatching, I heard.
We have a few that know their way around the barbell.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of good ones.
They've hoisted a snatch here. Yeah. They've cleared some kilos over their head.
Cleared it.
They cleared it right over their head. But yeah, come learn from Max, Joe, Colin Burns, Courtney Batchelor, Anthony Pomponio, Kristen Pope. Maybe the whole gang will be here.
Yeah, we'll see who shows up.
But Snatch Workshop here at Juggernaut HQ in Laguna Niguel. You can sign up for that at store.jtsstrength.com under events. Beyond that, last weekend in April, me and the three doctors, Mike, James, Quinn, Arlington, Texas, University of Texas Arlington, for the Juggernaut Performance Summit, teaching you about the four most important things there are to know in regards to lifting pieces of metal attached to other pieces of metal, program, design, nutrition, movement, and recovery. So you can sign up for that, and that's just all-day lecture. Ears will be bleeding by the end of it, but a pleasurable bleeding, I'd like to think. Or just bleeding from Mike's endless,
horrifically vulgar presentation. No.
Yes, but really, it's...
It is actually it pretty vulgar. It gets pretty... No kids.
But it's hilarious.
18 and over.
Yeah. We're going to put the parental advisory sticker on Dr. Israel's nutrition presentation.
Wow.
Nick will get mad at him, though.
Oh yeah, he's got to do it. He's got to do it nice this time.
He's got to do a nice one. But yeah, so we have that. Beyond that, in May, no seminars coming up in May that I can think of. In June, the dueling seminars.
Yeah.
First weekend in June, June 4th and 5th.
Third and fourth
and 5th. The Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
The first ones in June. On the Saturday, Marissa and I will be at the Naturally Fit Games in Austin. Yep. I'll be being neither natural nor fit there, but they'll still let me in anyways. And Max will be at Brazos Valley Barbell. Yep. Brazos Valley Barbell?
Something like that, yeah. I believe so.
So Max will be at Brazos Barbell in
beautiful College Station.
College Station. Is powerlifting on Saturday?
Yes, I believe. Weightlifting is first day and powerlifting is second.
Weightlifting on Saturday, powerlifting on Sunday for him. I'll be at Naturally Fit Games doing the booth, maybe doing a trick of lifting of some sort. We'll see.
I'm a not medley making... of sorts, a socio-constructed event in which a man hoists bars. I don't know. Some kind of James Smith.
Yeah, but no promises on if I'll be doing that or not. But then the next day we will be at FTA gym. What that stands for, I don't remember. But Marissa and I will be conducting a powerlifting clinic there on Sunday, either June 4th or 5th, whatever day that is. Maybe I'll just look it up. The 3rd is Saturday, the 4th is Sunday. So 3rd, weightlifting, Brazos Valley Barbell, Brazos Valley Barbell and College Station. The 4th, powerlifting with Max. Or you could come to beautiful Austin, Texas.
Oh, same day.
The actual beautiful city. It's fun and stuff.
Well.
And learn how to do powerlifting things from me. We didn't plan it that way.
That's true.
That was maybe an oversight. But I think they're pretty far apart from
each other. It's far enough apart that, you know.
Yeah, Texas is a big place.
Yeah.
Later in June, on the 18th, here at Juggernaut HQ, we have the USAW Juggernaut Summer Showdown. That's a weightlifting meet. And then, because apparently not creative as shit for coming up with names for meets, on August 20th, there'll be the USA Powerlifting Juggernaut Summer Showdown, the second annual.
Oh, my.
That's right, the second annual.
It is. Yeah. It'll be the second one. Do I have to wear the costume?
You gotta wear the judging costume.
You gotta wear the old slacks and shirt to hand out.
Lifters, be ready. When you step on Ada's platform, you are entering the red light district.
Literally everyone will be given a red light.
Yeah. You're starting with one, so you better squat extra deep for a chance at the other two. But yeah, we've got that going on. Before that, in May, we'll be off in Chicago.
National championships.
Yeah.
Good. Pan Ams.
They'll be clearing all kinds of fucking weights over their head.
That is so true.
Just clearing them left and right.
So true. Overhead power. you can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, or you can email me, maxjtsstrength, for any questions about the Juggernaut online coaching or any kind of events or programming. You can also find me on Facebook.
I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram. Filling up your newsfeed all day. Make sure you check out juggernautcoaching.com for more information about all of our online coaching programs. Got a couple new ones that are going to be coming out in the next few weeks for masters athletes and super total combined weightlifting and powerlifting programs. So be on the lookout for that. As always, subscribe to the Juggernaut Train Systems YouTube channel. We are very, very proud of the content we produce. Not just amazing parody videos of Step Brothers, but also very thoughtfully constructed educational program, educational information for nutrition, movement, weightlifting, powerlifting, mostly just those four things. But go check it out. Subscribe there. If you like this, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review and write us a review. We always like reading the funny, good reviews that we get from our fans. And you can find more about the Jug Life at thejuglife.com and the soon to be released Jug Life apparel. So thank you again to our sponsors, Virus, Grind, Trifecta, and French Presses and French Presses, for those who love fine coffee and big triceps. It's a lifestyle. This was the Jug Life. See you next week. I think we just pretend to talk and they'll be a exit song. Yeah.
Close up.